This week on RSP and the Update, the RuneScape leadership team is back, outlining what's next. Desperate Measures is on the way, the Orthon dig site is being designed, and we're going back to monthly releases. We'll talk about RuneScape's future plans and the minimum guaranteed content. This is RSP and the Update, episode 785, recorded Thursday, July 9th, 2020. Minimum guaranteed content. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSP and the Update. Just Tannis and myself here as we are each and every week. We recorded a lovely monthly bit this week. That was fun, wasn't it?
It was a good time. It was a good time.
And this was more of one where we kind of, I think, reaffirmed opinions and talked about some things that could have happened in RuneScape history and didn't. And really just, you know, said, hey, we're on a different path now, and this is what could have happened. And in case you're wondering what this is all about, this is our monthly bit on player interaction, or sorry, player input over the ages. But we'll talk more about that later. This week, of course, we're going to talk about patch notes and the live stream and some tech news before we wrap this one off and get everybody off to a nice weekend. But I am Shane12088, and he is Tannis79. So, patch notes this week. You know, this week's patch notes were light. It wasn't a ninja strike. It was just a patch week. Just a patch week of patches. Really, that's all there was. The main...
just a few patches.
Yeah, the main headline, of course, was the live stream, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But first things first in the patch notes, this one comes under the header of archaeology. When you completely fill an empty divine charge using the Divine-O-Matic vacuum, excess energy will now flow into the next empty divine charge instead of being wasted.
Well, that's good.
I had no idea it was wasted.
Why is that under archaeology?
I don't know.
I wonder if it has something to do with it. No, it shouldn't have anything to do with the relic.
Yeah, because it doesn't mention it.
I'm trying to figure that out.
So the way I read this is that, you know, if you're filling a divine charge, and if you fill that divine charge and you had excess energy that you were gathering at a spot, it wouldn't have any use to it. Which is a bit weird. And, you know, you're wasting time and you're essentially wasting energy with that. So, next up, players using an uncharged Divine-O-Matic vacuum with an active divine conversion relic power will now receive the correct amount of energy when converting memories at a rift. And of course, if you have an uncharged Divine-O-Matic, it should do nothing. Makes me wonder what was happening with this before, because of course the divine conversion relic is the one that lets you convert an entire basket or inventory of memories into energy at the same time, and oh boy, is that powerful. I've been playing with that a bit, doing some of the act track tasks with it.
Good stuff, huh?
Yeah. Additional messaging has been added when completing any of the Art Critic Jacques collections to indicate that the replica pieces of art can be displayed in the guild office. And, you know, I actually forgot about that you can display this art in the guild office.
Yeah, I didn't realize it. Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah. Did you know that the name Jacques, being French, is actually very prevalent in Canadian history? Because there was a French explorer named Jacques Cartier that effectively sailed the St. Lawrence and claimed what was Upper Canada for France.
No, I did not know that. But
yeah,
Jacques.
So just a fun little
Jacques Cousteau.
A fun little bit of Canadian history there. That, yeah, you're right. People normally think of Jacques Cousteau, but Jacques Cartier is the one people probably think of in Canada. Some archaeology materials have been added to the archaeology research, and Tetracompus loot tables for better distribution. It would have been nice to have a list here on this one to see what was there and
just what exactly is better distribution.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm thinking it probably leans towards the higher leveled materials, because I don't think I've seen any of the higher level god specific ones there. So that's probably what that's referring to. Moving on to other fixes, arcberry bushes will now give 5% farming reputation when harvested in line with other bushes.
Okay.
Which is actually, you know, arc bushes actually weren't too bad when they came out in terms of farming XP. They're actually an interesting thing to do. Of course, you can.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
You get
right, so
stuff.
You could like get 5%. Like you could just do your reputation on arc bushes like in a hurry.
Yeah,
5%.
And the thing is with this one though is that, you know, people always forget about this, and I don't know how this would fit in with everything else, but I do know that they were the best bush XP out there. So. Replaced outdated spell icons in the magic skill guides with up-to-date ones found in the magic ability book, as well as updated spell names in the magic skill guide to match the magic spell book. Because I'm thinking this goes back to EOC, because there's actually a bunch of spells that change names with EOC, and I'm betting that these weren't updated back then. So, players will no longer continue the mining animation indefinitely when mining the ancient rock in the Mountain Daughter quest. All right. The alphabetical order of the music player track list has been updated. So I guess the sense from this is that it wasn't sorting properly, or maybe there's some different way of handling the thes in there, but I think that might have been dealt with in a patch note previously. And, you know, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't even use the music player because I just let whatever play is in the area I'm in. So
it's,
I had no idea
this
anything
is probably
was wrong.
Just, well, it's probably people checking off what they've got done, right? On their music tracks.
Yeah, that would make sense, I guess.
I don't know. It's a stretch, but it's all I got.
Tooltip for the Terran and Hard task rewards on the achievement interface now mentions the Mushroom Patch teleport. Which, you know, when those stink shrooms came in and they were really good farming XP, this is something people would have been jumping up and down about. Multiple mushroom patches for this. If you weren't using the magic beans for it at the time. You remember how insane the XP was from those stink shrooms?
Oh, yeah.
It needed to be nerfed, obviously.
Yeah. No, I remember. I watched my friends just do crazy things with those.
Yeah. You know, a fun one was using the sundry beans on the hops patches, because there you would get either the reeds or the grapes, I think. You know what happens with that, right?
So. Oh, yeah.
Blue and green blubber jellyfish have been added to the I'm cooking options in the quick chat menu. Crystal now has been added to the I'm using a hatchet made of option in the quick chat menu. You know, you forget that quick chat exists, but, you know, this was put in as a way for muted people to communicate. And of course, later quick chat only worlds if you were under the age of 13, believe it or not.
Oh.
Telegrabbing on monster death will no longer cause the spring cleaner to malfunction. Okay. I'm wondering how bad of a malfunction that was. We've also added a tutorial for legendary pets. Yes. You know, you and I might think that these are fairly obvious what to do with them, but I think it was Earth who got a legendary pet recently when he was doing Slayer. And, you know, He had to ask me how to set it up because there was no guidance for it.
Yeah.
So
I think this is really good. I almost forgot myself between the time that I had all of my originals and then when I had to get one for the junior account.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait a minute. How do I make it pick up my stuff again?
You know, I haven't actually done Slayer since I bought my legendary pet all those years ago. So it's probably a completely different meta from what I was used to. Because remember, once upon a time, I said it actually put me to sleep doing Slayer.
Well, that's crazy. But yeah.
All right. Players no longer require 75 range to unlock the mechanized Chinchampa blueprint, as this requirement is not necessary to produce the item, though you do need 75 ranged in order to use it. Now, here's a fun one. Removed a reference to virtual levels upon leveling up in skills that reach level 120 without virtual levels. So that's our archaeology, our slayer, herb lore farming, and dungeoneering.
So that's just to cut down confusion then, right?
Yeah.
Stay aligned.
Yeah.
Good.
And then furthermore, cutting down on confusion, an A-B test for 50% of self-selected new players has ended. Now, what this means is that any player who chose I've Never Played Before will once again start on Tutorial Island. Note that the players can skip the tutorial in the settings menu or bypass sections of the tutorial with chapter exits.
Beautiful.
I wonder where they were putting them instead.
I don't know, but that's so, I mean, because if this is your second, third, fourth, fifth count, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, you've been able to skip it for years.
For real?
Yeah.
I've always went all the
way. I skipped it when I made that when I made that farming account last summer.
I've totally missed that option.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Wow, okay. Dirt.
If you say you've played before and recently, it will say, hey, perhaps you just want to skip the tutorial.
Damn.
Yeah. But yeah, it'd be interesting to know what exactly was the option instead of Tutorial Island on this. All right. Then we got some mobile changes. The buff bar and debuff bars have been relocated from the top of the interface to the bottom above the combat HUD. They've also been made marginally smaller. Yes.
That's good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's precisely where they should be, I think.
I think so, too. I mean, that's where it
makes the most sense, because if you're doing combat, you're going to be looking at your action bar, and you're going to be looking at your HP and your adrenaline, and then the buff bar is right there. And it makes sense to just have it there and leave the top for the actionable skilling stuff, because, you know, this was a problem before they did this. You know, the little orb that appears whenever you get XP? Mm-hmm. That would overlap with the buff bar if you had lots of buffs active, which was, you know, quite frankly, really stupid. The extra action button currently used for the Solak encounter has been repositioned to sit above the combat HUD. It will now move to account for the toggling of combat mode action bars. Okay. And the ribbon settings and setup UI has been moved and tied to the game's main setting interface as its own tab. Users can still access the interface from the existing button located on the custom ribbon itself. This is good because, you know, this is what we always talk about and what I always talk about, how when you're dealing with game settings, it's best to, you know, have the settings in one central area, which is something that's kind of been wishy-washy in the past. And I think that the revamp that they did of the new settings UI when that came out a month or so ago will greatly help this. And for anybody wondering, if you go into your mobile settings now, there's just a new tab at the top that says Ribbon, and it allows you to customize it. Because remember back when mobile first came out, Tanis, I said you had to click the hamburger button and then choose Ribbon to be able to do that?
Yeah.
And that was practically impossible to find. So.
Yeah. Well, even if you could find it, being able to touch it, it's been a challenge. If it, you know, those little, small little buttons,
and that's a whole other story as well. You know, about the touchability of the buttons in the bank and pretty much anywhere that there's a close button in the top right. X,
yeah, the close button is what killed me.
That's going to be a problem. And, you know, we even had people test it on large phones, small phones, and it's equally inaccessible on both. So that's something that really needs to be fixed. So fingers crossed. Next up, moving into general fixes, corrected multiple spelling errors in the Broken Home quest and quest rewards screen, as well as grammatical issues in the Council Wars menu have been resolved. The One Foot in the Grave mini-quest is no longer shown as complete after handing the body parts to Zavistic Rarv. My God, I don't remember this one. Any of these names ring a bell for you?
No, I was trying to think of what body parts would have been. I was thinking, like, there was the hand in the sand. What else? Like,
he is involved in Zogar Flesh Eaters, The Hand in the Sand, and Back to My Roots. So you got one of them, right?
Okay.
From May of 2005, resides at the Wizard's Tower. Or the Wizard's Guild.
Okay.
A full stop has been added to the end of the examine text for coconut milk. Yeah.
Okay.
Attempting to decant an ogre flask thermal into a potion flask will no longer force a logout.
Good.
A message received when creating a 4-dose potion no longer states that it's a 3-dose. Power burst potions are no longer dropped to the floor when the Wasteless Herblore ability triggers.
Oh.
Ooh, that's an expensive. That's an expensive oopsie.
Oops.
Yikes. The player owned house build mode checkbox now consistently reflects the build mode's actual status. Good. Twin Furies will no longer display their health on their individual health bars. The Dragon Breath ability will now animate correctly even when the asphyxiate animation is happening. You know, that's interesting. I didn't know that you could do these two together because asphyxiate is one of those channeling abilities that if you do something else during it, it'll break.
That's what I thought.
So, yeah.
Who it's knew? A choke.
Who knew? Augmenting Masterwork Armor now correctly states which version of the armor you have augmented. Apply to Fade Transition to hide the player model when upgrading buildings in a player-owned port. And finally, fixed an issue where the Entity Highlights option being enabled on login despite being disabled in the previous login. So this is kind of like that issue we had with the Depth of Field when that first came out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, live stream time.
Live
this,
stream.
This was one that that all the world was counting on and hoping that something fun and interesting would come from it because you know we needed this live stream today, this week. We honestly really did. I'm going to run a bit of a background video of the live stream on this. And, you know, I actually started it in a fun little way. They made it so that they appeared back on their own sofas back at the actual studio there. They put all their faces there. And, you know, you forget that they had that set, but it obviously still exists. And one day soon, hopefully, they'll get back there. But this was Mod JD hosting with Mods Osborne, Raven, and Warden. Mods Mike and Hooli later joined when Mod Raven departed. Okay. So. Lots of banking on this one, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And we got desperate measures.
You know, we did.
Release date of July 27th.
We got the one thing that we were pretty sure we were going to get no matter what. So, yeah, the one update that we had a good idea would be coming, it was confirmed. Yay.
It has been in development since March. They did some initial designs. The designs were tweaked and development was restarted in February and March of this year. Mod Raven said in the lore Discord that he did some work on it last year, but that to change some crucial details about it that it needed redesigning. So they redesigned it, and that's why we're getting it now, rather than directly following archaeology, amongst other things.
Which, you know, like, that's That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
they had to basically scrap the design of it, right? And you know, they were kind of coy on what this is going to mean, but they said that there's going to be definitely some tie-ins with archaeology. You'll learn some things, and there's a good chunk of historical and recent lore in it, which is going to be wonderful. And Maud Osborne was really happy about this. He said one of the positives of Desperate Measures coming out means that Desperate Measures can enrich archaeology. And what they plan to do with this is make some slight tweaks to the way archaeology works with this. So I wonder what that's going to be. And, you know, they didn't tease what the rewards were, but there's going to be something to enhance archaeology already with this.
Well, there will be the dig site too, right?
Not with this. That'll be later.
Later? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that'll be later.
I thought that was going with this.
That's later. No, the dig site is in design phase right now.
Yeah, they did, and I knew that they said there was going to be like good rewards for Desperate Measures, which I'm like, we'll see.
Have you noticed that you say measure differently? You say measure. You say measure instead of measure. And this goes to the way some of us say peg.
It does. It does. Measure. I say a lot of like southern words are in my vernacular for some reason.
Requirements will be the Anachronia base tutorial, Desperate Times, 50 agility, 50 archaeology, and level 75 or so combat.
Yeah, Man, I was on the fence. When they said that, I was like, man, that's... I thought... Instinctually, I think it's good. I'm glad. It tells me that there's going to be maybe something to the quest. But I hear a whambulance down the street, and it's getting closer.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And I'm sure we're going to hear that, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's look at the concept art that they had here with this. So all these things are going to be in the quest. There's this big yellow orb that I can only describe it what looks like a Borg maturation chamber. There are some vials with various substances in them. There are some other implements. I don't know exactly what they are. They got some purple and black wires coming out of them. Then at the bottom, we got what looks like a dragon knife, a dragon cleaver, and dragon secateurs. What do you make from the concept art here? I know you just recently looked at it, but
yeah,
they said there's spoilerish things in this image.
Yeah, I don't understand what it is.
Like, are these dragon equipments in the bottom here?
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me.
Like a dragon knife, a dragon cleaver, and dragon secateurs, as in additions to the I don't know what skill a knife would be from. Crafting, I guess.
But what's the point? I mean, what's the point of a cleaver? Like, that's never been something you use anyway. I mean, I know it's down there in the chest.
Yeah, you can get it from the chest.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine if you want like a dragon keepsake on it or something. But, and the skizzers, or how do you say it? I've done skizzers. Scrimmeters.
Not scimitars. Secateurs.
Secateurs, okay. We have magic ones of those, so...
Yeah.
I mean, would dragon be any better?
I mean, or maybe...
Maybe
it's a set of dragon pliers that's used for pulling teeth. Or maybe this is like a... You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of a surgeon's kit. So this is an operating table.
An old-timey...
We have an operating table.
Yeah.
Then we have a knife.
You're right.
Then we have the cleaver, and then we got the.
Yeah.
So it's like maybe it's like dentistry or something.
That could be.
Now the question I have is, what exactly is the vials up top? Is this going to be for ancient herb lore?
ancient herb lore?
Yeah, because you remember one of the things that they said could come to archaeology at some point was ancient potions? Because we got ancient summoning and ancient invention?
That's got to come with a new site, right?
Yeah, and
we need a new mystery for that.
And the Orthon dig site is in development. It's in the design phase right now. No, I don't know.
Oh, this chamber. Dude, this is where one of the things is going to be. I bet we're pulling something out of it, maybe? Like, you think an elder god is going to be in there or something?
No, can't be.
No.
Well, Karapak did say he wanted to put them to sleep. So maybe that has something to do with it.
And then he's going to cut out their
essence.
Godliness. Yeah.
I hope there's a good puzzle associated with all these things.
That's kind of what I thought that was at first until you came up with the doctor's kit. I'm like, it's pretty good. Pretty good call. But Raven's evolved. You know there's going to be a puzzle.
Yeah.
And Desperate Times had puzzles. I still ain't made it past it.
I don't know. Those weren't really puzzles.
They feel like it. I'm going to have to stream it.
You know, my definition of puzzle is basically Elemental Workshop or Morning's End Part 1 light puzzle, right?
God. That's harsh.
Oh, man. I would love another one of those light puzzle kind of ones.
That was so harsh. Well, he did one with the Light Within, and it sucked too. But it wasn't quite as bad.
Involved.
But it was. Yeah, it wasn't fun though.
All right, but that's Desperate Measures. We'll be hearing more about it in the coming live streams over the next 2 weeks. I think we could move on to other things, which is what everybody, of course, wanted. With this was a catch up in terms of figuring out what exactly was going to happen with the future of RuneScape here. And this is when Mods Mike and Hooli joined. And, you know, this is what everybody was waiting for. I think what we got to talk about on here is the fact... Well, actually, we got to talk about many things here. And, you know, I was happy to be proven wrong on this one. Exactly what was going to be the future for update strategy and whatnot. I was happy to be proven wrong on that one. But in any case, they started with a catch-up of the teams and talking about adapting to the new normal in the world, as we've all done. And they said there were, quite frankly, a lot of team and productivity challenges. The perfect storm of launching archaeology, then moving to working remote. It worked really well for some people at home who were more productive, and some had greatly produced productivity in terms of talking about the people who had children at home who, you know, were homeschooling and whatnot. And each employee's situation was entirely different with that. And, you know, lots of people are going to say to you, do you actually believe what came out of this and that this was the case? And, you know, I think we talked about, and I think it makes sense to me that kind of situation is going to be different for everybody involved, because everybody works different at home and everybody works different in an office, and not everybody has, as Maude Osborne said, a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, right? So.
Yeah. And I really think that is the difference, because even people with older kids seem to, you know, just anecdotally, but like I've heard chatter, like, with meetings my wife's been in, that they're really super productive because they're not having any distractions because there's no kids around and there's no like coworkers around.
Pop over
to the desk, right? But when you got kids, man, and you're trying to teach them on top of that, because we had to learn how to be teachers real fast. So it is a lot. So if they got a lot of employees that have with children, that is a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I took note of in here, and this is aside from the stream, Maude Warden in the background has a diva statue, of course, because he worked at Blizzard, but he's also got a MacBook and a Mac Pro. an old style Mac Pro, that is. And fun note that he said on the live stream, he has five children, two of which are in the United States still, didn't make the move to the UK, but three of his children did move with him to the UK. And you can only imagine how that would be working from home in that sense. So,
Man, that requires a big home, and I've always heard that like housing is really expensive over there. Like,
yeah,
it's hard to find.
And smaller houses too. You know, they don't have those massive ones like we do, unless you live
in
some
McMansions.
royal estate. Yeah. Warden says, as an executive producer in the short term, he's doing the planning, but he's also planning for 1, 2, and 5 years into the future and building these longer-term plans out. And what he's doing is, rather than just looking at content, he's taking a whole studio approach and aiming for more alignment with everything. And here's the big one that we need to talk about with what's changing going forward in the future on this one. You ready for this? And this is where I'm happy to be proven wrong. He said he is not in the position to make archaeology-level content at this moment in terms of the vast scope and size of it.
Which I don't understand. Like, is it – was he saying that because of the work from home?
Yes, from the work from home. That's what I took from it. As in, there will be no Excel updates in the near future. But he said he's moving towards and confident that he can move towards a tighter cadence with a monthly release cycle rather than 6 months or yearly releases, and wants to better manage predictability in a shorter time frame. And he said this is his new way to work internally from the at-home perspective, and rapidly pivoting towards a shorter cadence and working towards a minimum guarantee of content. And, you know, I have to go back to the very first time he appeared on live stream, and I just have to quote him for this. And if anybody out there is close to Mod Warden and would potentially be listening to this, it needs to come back to what he said on that very first live stream. Action, action, action. That is the number one thing I've heard this week about this, is that, yeah, sure, people are happy about this. People are happy about the way this goes. I'm happy with a one-month release cycle. Personally, I think that's the sweet spot over the expansion model, which seemed like they were going to. But it has to be backed up with concrete action. And as he said in his first live stream, action, action, action. And if they can deliver on that, maybe we'll be able to salvage some of the goodwill that was gained with archaeology.
See, I've been wrong. I've been surprised. And I am not sure how I feel about it, because I don't – I mean, only time will tell. Only time will tell.
Because you were on the expansions bandwagon that we were getting expansions by any other name,
I
agreed with you.
Really thought so. I mean, just by all indications, that's what it looked like. And then all of a sudden, it looked like, okay, now we're headed – okay, so they're going to try to stick to this monthly cadence, but how are they going to produce – the level of content that we all expect at this point. And then, and that really made me think about why, what is driving it? What is different about RuneScape? What, you know, just
and
what's
going
on here?
He said it will be small and medium sized updates.
Yes. Yeah. I noticed that.
This is a chance for a renaissance, people. Because people have always been saying, we want to get back to that, you know, traditional, small, medium, you know, quirky kind of RuneScape update.
I don't think people's going to like it when they get it. They've outgrown it and just don't realize it.
And that's where the community management team and what Mod Hooley wants to do comes in, of managing expectations.
Well, it's also where some of our discussion we had earlier this evening comes into play, of maybe people don't actually know what they want sometimes.
Yeah, and that's why you know, this wasn't polled or surveyed. And when asked what does this look like, he said it's a mixture of all sizes of content. The first couple are about practicing working in a tighter release window, And the goal is to bring in eventually medium and larger pieces of content. And I want to underscore that practicing working in a tighter release window.
Yeah, he's going to bring the crunch to Jagex, huh?
Oh, I bet that you already have that kind of crunch happening whenever you have a big release on the way. And, you know, that's really unfortunate for people who have to take that home with them. So hopefully there will be good time management on the side of the studio on that. They did say they plan to try and crank out another Quest from this year. So there's that. And, you know, my hope from this, because, you know, if you think the last time we had regular content was a year ago before Anachronia came out. Because it was Anachronia, nothing, a mobile update, nothing, RuneFest, 120 Herblore, 120 Farming, Christmas, the wait for Archaeology with a couple of Yak Tracks thrown in here, War's Retreat, which was in January, Archaeology, then we're on that wait again, and I've just summed up a year's worth of content by counting the number of fingers on my hand. And that's why it's so important to get to this month-to-month release cycle, I think.
Because think about it. If that – I mean, is that the limits of their ability when it comes to big updates? Because if it is, and you were to package all – say you could package all of that into one expansion, maybe that would be – that might be worth, I don't know, $20-$30, right? That you'd pay for that. I mean, you wouldn't. It'd have to be like 6 months worth of membership, right? But I'm just saying, quality wise, you'd be willing to pay that. Are you gonna pay for the other 6 months that you didn't get anything?
Uh-uh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we answered why we're back to this cadence.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it fits RuneScape better than the expansion model, honestly. I know you like expansions, but I think it just fits the RuneScape model better. So
I favored the expansions because sometimes I still look at RuneScape and think what I think it could be. And, you know, maybe sometimes, and maybe we can all take a little bit of this with us and just sit back and let the professionals do what they do. You know, the expansion model works wonderful in a lot of other games, some other games that I really, really enjoy. But if they think it's not right for this game, maybe it's not right for this game.
And that's the way it is.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about upcoming content. The Beach is coming back this summer. It'll be here on July 20th. We're getting a news posting tomorrow as of recording, Friday, so you guys can already go out and read that. So there's that, and it's going to be a focus on past beach events that people enjoyed and some new things that in general are, I guess just polishing up of existing beach events.
We only had 1 year break on the beach.
No, it was two. Last one was,
it two
or no three. Last one was 2017.
No.
Yeah. Pretty
sure. 3 years. Beach?
I think so.
For real? Well, it's time to hit the beach. I mean, it's the only safe beach we can go to. Let's hit the beach.
Sorry, last one was 2018. So
okay. I think it had been that. I was like, okay, 2 years, though. That's still longer than what I thought.
Yeah.
I'd go back to the beach.
Yeah. So.
Time to start an Iron Man.
Why?
If you're ever going to start an Iron Man, you start it when one of these events drop. It's a lot of really easy and free experience.
For construction, I assume?
For whatever. Whatever's offered there. But yeah, construction's a big one.
Yeah. All right. Ninja Team, the focus on that brought in lots of quality of life updates. short-term improvements, and they're adding more to what's happening on the Ninja front, including fixes to the Lunar Spellbook. So which Lunar spells should be updated? They'd like to hear about that in the Ninja Dojo. Which is interesting to me. Because, I mean, I didn't think there's anything wrong with the Lunar Spellbook. Do you? I mean, aside from the fact that a bunch of them are unlocked from the Pauline minigame, the Livid Farm.
Yeah, that's really bad. But on top of that, though, like, how many of those spells do you really use anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's like one teleport on a farm run that you use from that book, and is there anything else?
Care plant is good. I would say change bake pie to bake anything or cook anything, and increase the rune cost on it. Cure other, those ones make sense. Cure me. Repair rune pouch is good.
But do they even need repaired anymore? I thought there was something new that came in from that.
That was, no, you still have to go talk to the guy in the abyss for that, or use the NPC contact spell, or just use the new relic that prevents the degradation of him.
That's what it was.
Yeah, okay. It was the new relic that prevents that. Vengeance is good. Vengeance group. I don't know. Like I said, I don't even know exactly what I'd change on here.
I just don't think any of them are really usable. Like, I used some of them when I was training magic, but that was like a really long time ago. I mean, that's like 6 or 7 years ago at this point. You know, like, I don't think, like, String Amulet is as viable as it once was. Or,
well, it would be if Trekkie. Like, if you're talking to Trekkie, he made tons of glories with that before. And that's actually how I got 99 Magic, believe it or not.
I believe it. I mean, yeah, it was viable at one point. It's just not really now.
Yeah, so I mean, if you have ideas of how
that
could
use a fresh coat of paint for sure.
Maybe remove Livid Farm and do something else.
Oh, remove Livid Farm. Yes.
But then for all of us who, you know, waited for our Livid Plants from the merchant in the farming guild shop, we'd be, of course, in question on that. So, they want to hear about clue scrolls also in the dojo. Which was weird to me because, you know, we just had a clue scroll overhaul.
Yeah, I'm thinking this came up because clue scrolls must be way more popular than I would have ever thought.
Oh, they are.
I'm guessing, like, people are just really into these clue scrolls.
Yeah,
like,
they are.
That's the only explanation I can think of.
Also, clan updates. What should be focused on in relation to clans? So if you have any ideas on any of these, use the dojo. Also, are there certain mini games or skills that should be focused on by the ninja team? So this was the ninja soapbox, as he called it.
You know, I'm curious of what the ninjas could do with mini games here and there. I mean, it might work, it might not. I'm curious. Because when they go in, they do a lot of quality of life stuff, and it's different from just the Thaler rework.
What you need for the mini games in general is you need shared instance worlds for all of them. And then a queue system so that you can go into a new mini games interface that probably looks a bit like the grouping interface. And then you say either I want to play the Spotlight minigame or I want to – then you can check other minigames you want to play, like Castle Wars or Fishing Trawler or Trouble Brewing. And then whenever there's enough people ready who tick this box across all the worlds who want to go play one, you just get whisked away and automatically moved into an instance for that. Actually, I'm going to suggest that on the dojo.
Yeah, no, that's actually really
because
really
I think that's our last crack – at violating? revitalizing mini games.
Well, and but did, I mean, notice what you're talking about. Like, I think what
I'm
you're
talking about a queue system.
Well, I know, but I also think that is the kind of thing that the ninjas can do to content that is kind of this workaround that actually works really well. So maybe, I mean, maybe they could do it. Yeah. I'm at least curious. I want to see if they can't not.
Yeah, I agree. Also, in terms of other new content that's coming out, another piece of alchemical onyx jewelry. They're not saying what it is yet, but it's in development.
Get them fortunate components
yep.
going.
That's why people like Clue Scrolls. They're also going to be celebrating the 12th anniversary of a piece of content from September 2008.
Dude. You provided a list, and
I did provide a list.
I, for the life of me, I'm like, nothing on here is worthy of an anniversary.
Well, the choices are Distractions and Diversions, the 12th anniversary of bringing in Distractions and Diversions, which include, or were brought in at the time to include, Balthazar's Circus, Penguin Hide and Seek, and the Shooting Star. The other choices include Clan Wars, Summer's End, The Quest, of course, and Defender of Varrok, another quest.
A lot of quests.
And they said they're going to try and get a second quest out this year after Desperate Measures, so I don't think it's going to be something focusing on Summer's End or Defender of Varrok. And the other thing they did was they increased the trade margins. So it's got to be something to do with either Clan Wars or Distractions and Diversions. And my money would be on the Clan Wars front, because why else would he have asked for ninja fixes for clans? Because what you do then is you package a new Clan Wars kind of system that comes out in September, a revitalization of it, and you also package it with a Ninja Strike update. And when you do that, you can effectively do another piece of branded content focused around clans.
And it might just get the people that, like, so I've never really done Clan Wars, don't do Clan Wars, but I loved that world event too.
Yeah.
Where it was and
you know what I said back in the day? That is the way you bring PvP back to this game. You do it safely, use the clans as a front, and you make it accessible to everyone.
Yeah, then that might work.
Oh, could this be the revitalization of PvP?
It would be the last best effort, right?
Oh, you know what? I think it might be Clan Wars, because they want to get people. They're going to want to get people into a PvP sense eventually. Because if you look on the Jagex.com website, they're hiring for an action RPG, which signifies something like Diablo. Now, what if there was a RuneScape Diablo kind of game, and you had a PvP base in RuneScape, and you wanted them to be interested in it? Granted, I'm, you know, reading a lot of tea leaves here, but that could be very interesting.
Well, I'm interested to see if that could bring, you know, people to do PvP again. I don't know what clan. I'd have to, like, my clan's not. There's no way, dude. We call my clan the retirement home.
Yeah.
For the main.
Yeah.
So I'd have to go with that. I'd have to go on the all with you guys, because this yeah. But it would be fun, because, like, that world event was fun.
Yeah.
Like, And I know they've gotten feedback that people really like that. People that don't PvP, people that weren't into that stuff, like, still thought that was a really cool thing.
Yeah, I agree. What else have we got? They added the Orthon dig site to the list of things they're working on in relation to archaeology. And they're doing this because it was one of the best pieces of content from both the player perspective and the data perspective. So that's good. And we know we needed that because that was one of the first things that everybody thought was a signal that it was, the new skill was going to be archaeology in one of our roundtables last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they added clarification to this that the Elder God Wars dungeon is still in development. They just didn't mention it here. So there's that.
And, I mean, not for nothing, but I'm guessing we need desperate measures before Elder Gods.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I'd imagine so. Now, this was also summed up by saying that with the – or sorry – they did talk about the live ops stuff, and we'll talk about the summation here. Their goals for the live ops team and Mod Mike is to do a lot more with Halloween and to do something more during the Christmas season because, you know, as they said, one of the things that people always like is a strong showing for Halloween and Christmas. And, you know, they actually highlighted the Death's House cleanup one as one of the favorite Halloween events back from 2014. That they're looking at with this. So I was very pleased with that.
I'm glad. That makes sense if they're trying to get to the shorter, tighter cadence of small and medium updates. The Halloween and Christmas are, you know, those are two that we usually really look forward to.
Oh, definitely.
If they had enough time to put something decent together, instead of kind of an afterthought, you know,
they need to be community-based events that bring people together.
Well, and that was the great part of the Death's House cleanup was the more people you had there, the more people you put on one ghost, the better. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, and I think also Christmas 2015 in the Lumbridge Crater with all the Christmas events was fun too.
Oh yeah, yeah. So. I don't mind getting back. You know, getting back to that would be great. Looking forward to Halloween this year.
Absolutely. So with the goal with monthly content release cadence is that there's a lot of different player groups they need to look after. So bossing, skillers, and he said questing in particular. And they're very committed to lore and narrative. And the goal is to have another quest out by the end of the year, but they'll just have to wait and see on that. Now, future Yak Tracks could also link into the distractions and diversions. I hope not.
I heard that. I was like,
I don't want a distraction or a Yak Track where I need to play five games of Castle Wars or Soul Wars or
Pest
Control or something. I really don't want that.
I mean, at least Pest Control wouldn't be painful, but I'm thinking it's going to be like Fish and Trawler.
Oh, Fish and Trawler is actually my favorite. That and Trouble Brewing.
But you have to do it when you have, five or six people to do it. Like, you can't just do it whenever you want.
So Clan Quest has events every Saturday on this. If anybody wants to do their mini games with Clan Quest, just join the clan chat and fill out an application. And that's one of my favorite things is that, you know, we have these old games and whatnot, but I mean, Trouble Brewing, Soul Wars, Stealing Creation we even did. It's amazing.
I love Soul Wars.
Yeah.
Soul Wars and Pest Control are my favorites.
I see Soul Wars and Pest Control too similar, so I prefer Pest Control.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's see. One of the things that Mod Warden hates, he said, is not being able to deliver on promises made, and he aims to take out the risk and ensure delivery on everything. And that's why we haven't heard anything, and that's why he has been very close keeping his cards to a chest with roadmaps and whatnot.
Yeah. Very, very much so. So, that's why, I'll save it for the end.
Yeah, I think that needs to be said. He also said that he's made some new hires recently. He's hired a new lead producer from Remedy, who he's personally worked with on EVE Online and World of Darkness. He also hired a new art director who worked on Call of Duty Mobile. as well as hiring a whole new content development team.
I wonder what this team is.
I don't know. And he said he's been onboarding them, so presumably they'll start firing on all cylinders soon. He's also working on processes and figuring out how to work in the new world situation. And in regards to the Orthon dig site, it's at the design stage. It'll be no smaller than the dig sites that we have currently. It'll be about uncovering lore and learning the environment, both from today and in the future. Activity pets are still on the back burner to be released at some point this year. Halloween event, as I said, looking to Broken Home and Death's Door. And Maud Hooley says that he hopes that this live stream is the start of a dialogue and continued conversation between the players and the devs. And I think that's perhaps the most important thing to take away from this, aside from some of the advancements that we highlighted, is that, yes, this can be a start to this communication and whatnot, but if we don't keep hearing direction on content, like we, you know, practically have heard nothing in terms of future direction since after archaeology, then that's going to be a problem. So I think there should be monthly updates like this.
And, you know, like, I understand what he's saying, but at the same time, Maud Hooley is new. And so this is a new start for him. This could be the start of this conversation. But for us, we've heard this before.
And as we said, the key to this will be making sure that they deliver.
Yeah. I kind of found this like, this is kind of like an English breakfast, right? You know, the beans on toast stuff. It'll keep you alive, but it's not satisfying in any way.
That's like, because it has to be backed up with action.
Yeah. Yeah, like it'll do. It'll hold us over, but it didn't scratch the itch. Not for me anyway.
Yeah. And you know, for me, I just want to see action on this, and I want to see more communication in relation to the direction that has been taken on this. So that's very important. Now, Maud Osborne said he's also going to be doing the annual survey this year and ramping up more player advocacy groups or PAGs.
I can't wait to see it. I want to know.
Fingers crossed.
I want to know. Fingers crossed.
Warden said regarding a backlog, if players want to speak loudly about certain areas, it can nudge Jagex in a direction, but it won't be a voting system. So I think a classic example for this would be is that if there's old quest lines people want to see worked on, that's what you would do. And hey, come on a podcast and talk about it. Like I'll talk about my gnomes. Or Elemental Workshop.
They do need... How about gnomes? Because they need more love.
And Elemental Workshop.
Is doing just fine and wherever it is. Seers.
And you know, if they wanted to put quests out, that would be the one. Because remember, they did the design for the next two of them at the last game jam.
Let me say this. If they ever do that quest, the puzzle should give a reward that is replayable and redoable so that it will satisfy the puzzle people in this game to get their fix. And we don't have to have Elemental Workshop 6.
No, they're actually working on 6. They did the designs for 5 and 6. And 7 is meant to be the final one.
Oh, no.
So you got at least 3 more for the gift to keep on giving.
Well, let's hope that comes in at the pace of George R. R. Martin's books, okay?
Oh, that's too funny. All right. Most of the technological work for interface scaling has been done. It's been passed off to the content team. So there's over 3,000 UIs. They can't tackle them all. They'll be picking the highest priority ones to make improvements with. And a logical start would be the first-time user experience. So that means we could start seeing changes for interface scaling.
I hope they read Fairon's article from Love of May.
I also hope they listen to you on accessibility on that front. Because that's actually more of a you domain, believe it or not. Because the way the interface is laid out, that's what was in the UI consistency article at informer.rsbnb.com, if anyone's wondering. But yours for accessibility is definitely interface scaling.
So, oh, yes. Oh.
Because that's more accessibility than design.
I agree. I didn't think about it like that.
Then Maud Osborne said remastering is still on the table, but they've elected to move it into other areas of content as they move forward. And Shattered Worlds was a good example of this. And everything is being seen through this lens. There's no landmark remastering updates on the plan currently, like, say, a remastered Varrock or Karamja or Miscellanea or God Wars Dungeon 1.
See, and that was like, that's something that I'm going to miss. That in my mind I thought would come from expansions, right? I thought you would get a remastered area. You're going to get a complete storyline, so like maybe four or five quests and a storyline, a new area, new stuff, like that.
But yeah,
that's so wrong. Hurts a little bit.
iOS mobile, they're working on hitting their iOS compliance list. And in regards to, is there a roadmap? He's not going to put out a month by month roadmap. Warden won't. He said it would be layered with disappointment if things are missed, and his roadmaps are changing rapidly behind the scenes. And when it's time to ship And when it's time to ship things, there will be a marketing effort and they're not going to be shipping content willy-nilly. Those were his exact words. Things are going to be strategically placed.
So these, like I said, these things are good. You know, are they exciting? Not really. But they're good and I hope they come to pass.
Yeah. Because if not, then, I mean, you throw away more of that goodwill.
But you end up with the same old story. And I'm not willing to say this is the same old story yet. You know, my warden came in, and I felt like it then. I still feel like it now that he was going to shake things up. He was going to mold things. And what I'm seeing now is he's doing that. It's a little more within the structure of Jagex than I thought it would be originally. But that might be a good thing.
Yeah.
But now we just have to the rubber is meeting the road. Like, you know, this is where we're going to have to see it really come in, because archaeology was such a big hit, but we know that had been in development for a really long time.
18 months.
So, I mean, this is where we're going to see you know, if all these changes are going to produce a better product. I am still really hopeful that it will. I think it will, but, you know, if they go back to what we saw last summer, I just don't know how much people will accept.
Yeah, and you know, that's why delivery is so important. And that's really
action,
all there is
action,
to it.
Action, right?
That's what it comes down to. And I would absolutely hate for Maud Warden to be his own worst enemy on this, to tout something when he first appeared on stream last November or whenever that was, and to not be able to deliver on that.
Right. And like I said, I still feel, I don't know, I'm still hopeful. He just doesn't strike me as the kind of person that doesn't deliver. It just, I don't know. That's not the vibe that I get.
Yeah. Yeah. Alrighty.
I get it better be done right. That's the vibe I get.
Yeah.
And it's not coming out until it is right.
And it better be done well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on then. Let's talk about our World Cup of Quests update, because we're into the finals now on this. Into the finals. Oh, sorry, the semifinals, not the
semifinals.
Last week was the quarterfinals. Now we got the semifinals. So starting off on this one, Children of Ma versus Sliskay's Endgame. This was the last of the quarterfinals before we go into the semifinals. Sliskay's Endgame won 55-45 over Children of Ma.
Well, of course. I mean, they're both bad. I mean, they're both good lore-wise.
Okay.
But they both had bad, like, what? Hard challenges. Yeah, dude, well, for me.
Children of Ma was a masterpiece.
It was extremely... I had that one had some issues with me.
Oh, okay. Accessibility?
Yeah, Fair. It was fight. It was when you were had to... Oh, gosh, you're defending something or fighting.
Was it the lava surfing?
Yeah. Okay. I think so.
Okay. Fair enough.
There were a few things. Anyway, Sliskay's Endgame was a really hard maze, but you could.
Yeah, and most of my problem with Sliskay's Endgame comes from the fact that it was thrown on our lap 3 days before Christmas.
Oh, that was wrong.
Yeah,
I bet that had to be. Yeah,
Recorded that episode on the 22nd, shipped it on the 23rd, did the quest on the 20th and 21st, and then celebrated Christmas the day after we shipped that episode. Now, the semifinals start off with Well Gothic Sleeps versus The World Wakes. And despite...
That could have been the final right there.
That could have been. But despite... what everybody has said and everybody has done in all these matches previously, one day left, the World Wakes is losing to Well Gothic Sleeps. 54.6 to 45.4. Well Gothic Sleeps is ahead.
No way.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I'm just glad somebody finally knocked this quest off of its high horse. And I say that in the nicest way possible, because it's one of the most impactful quests that they have ever shipped. But quite honestly, it didn't deserve to beat Desert Treasure, as I think happened in the very beginning of this.
Yeah, I love it, man. I don't know. I thought it was, yeah.
So you'd be voting for me. So you'd be voting for The World Wakes then?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
I really enjoyed that quest, man. Like, it was one of... I mean, it's got to be one of my top three quests, maybe.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's up there with Plague's End for me. Like, it was...
Oh, yeah, right. It beat Recipe for Disaster in the beginning. So, and, you know, we've been going on this since the beginning of May.
That's pretty crazy.
It beat Recipe for Disaster 69 to 30. So,
well,
I'm happy if it goes down here, honestly.
I'd like to see it win, take it all. But at this point, I think it looks like Gothic Sleep is just too nostalgic and legendary to be beaten at this point. I mean, if it knocks off World Wakes, I don't see Sliskay's Endgame or Children of Ma beating it.
No, definitely not. You know, I'm trying to find the original vote here. Of the one where Well Gothic Sleeps beat Desert Treasure, but I can't find that one because that one should have been first in terms of the votes. I guess we'll go back in the archives to late May on this, but Yeah. Fun times indeed on this. And it's been so long, too, since this. And I've been trying to do my best here to keep everybody updated on what was going to be happening with this. So I hope that you guys have enjoyed this coverage so far. And I encourage everybody to vote as these continue to ramp up. Unfortunately, by the time you're listening to this, you won't be able to vote in while Guthix sleeps versus the world wakes, but definitely in all the other ones here. So, all right. Anything else regarding World Cup Quest that you want to talk about?
No, I think it's been fun to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. It has. So, all right, let's move on then. And, you know, I think this is a perfect time to talk about our Patreon offerings. But before we do that, I will thank this week Brock H., Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, James W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Rippeth, Samantha R., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Zant, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And, you know, if you're wondering what exactly we're talking about here, well, this is our Patreon offerings, which you can find at patreon.com/rsbnb. And that's where you can support the podcast monetarily, if you so choose to. And you know, we offer a number of tiers of support here for this. Starting for as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits and more. With this, you also get early access to our show notes, and you do, of course, help fund the cost of hosting and production of RSBNB Update, and I'm sorry about that. I forgot our memories on that list, so we'll add that one to the list. But in addition to that, you do earn the ability to participate in our roundtables, vote on the monthly bits, and all this is for $1 a month, so you get a lot for that. But we also do have an option for $3 a month where you get a special VIP rank on Discord and mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show, in addition to everything else. So if this sounds interesting to you, for as little as $1 a month, just sign up at patreon.com/rsbnb. That includes our monthly bit, our inside RSBNB update, both of which are going live tomorrow. We have a monthly bit regarding the history of player input in the game of RuneScape. We also have our inside update interview with David, our resident PVM expert. And we'll also be doing our roundtable this Saturday at 8 p.m. game time, which is 4 p.m. Eastern. Just join the Discord for that. And of course, we do have movie night, and we're consulting with the Patreons about how we do this going forward, whether it be a live event or if it's something in particular that's more of a commentary purpose. So just check all that out and more at patreon.com/rsbnb. And thank you so much, everybody, for supporting us.
Thanks, guys.
All right. You ready for tech news?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, TikTok. We talked about TikTok recently, or TikTok, as some people like to call it. it was one of the many apps that was found to be snooping on unsuspecting users' clipboards on iOS with iOS 14.
Yeah. Among others, right? Yeah. So, well, I'm saying, like, it's been in trouble too because it, like, they've been accused of filtering what they deem unsightly or not attractive people or surroundings.
Really?
You've heard all those stories, right? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of stories about TikTok.
Wow. All right. Fair enough. But it was revealed this week that the U.S. administration is looking at banning TikTok and other Chinese social media apps from the privacy standpoint. And the U.S. Secretary of State said that they're taking this very seriously and looking after this. And, you know, at the end of the day, this all comes down to privacy and whether or not an application used inside the United States by, you know, in large part, what is teenagers at this time?
Well, it's even younger, dude. It's like tweens.
Oh, that's...
I mean, that's really what uses TikTok the most.
Yeah, then that's really concerning on that.
It's super concerning. I don't, you know, I'm all for this because we have enough problems with privacy. We have enough problems with, you know, how many stories have we done on Facebook? How many stories have we done on other social media?
Yeah. It's advertising online.
Yeah. And so with last week's story about the clipboard scraping, you know, I think it's that's too much. And it's time to look at these kind of measures.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And, you know, we also need to realize that there are potentially people who are using applications like TikTok who are going to have their data routed through, you know, what exactly. And, you know, TikTok says that they're taking great strides to make sure that people's data isn't routed through Chinese servers. But, you know, it still doesn't matter. The issue is that this is, you know, by and large part, a Chinese social media application that is caught on like wildfire. And, you know, you really have to ask the question, why isn't somebody out there like Snapchat competing with them? Because it seems like it would be in Snapchat's wheelhouse. And, you know, on this week, it was also announced that Facebook is shutting down their TikTok clone as well for some reason. So what I hope happens from this is I hope that a new version that is based around security and user privacy would emerge from this. And, you know, it's not routed through any potentially dangerous servers, let's just say. And, you know, it ultimately comes down from the fact that TikTok says that user data is stored in the U.S., but we can't forget that it's a Chinese company. And this is how they say that, oh, no, we're doing this. We're providing this as a service. And we also need to realize that India has actually banned TikTok, and they were the first ones to do it. So this could have a snowballing effect.
Yeah, I mean, there are tensions between India and China at the moment.
Big ones.
Border skirmishing. So, I mean, that doesn't surprise me, but I think we probably are looking at it because of the privacy. And I mean, that's good. We haven't always been looked out for when it comes to our privacy.
Yeah, and that's the main thing to really realize on this one too. So,
yeah, and it's especially like, I mean, yes, there are older users and stuff, but predominantly you see younger people on there. Like I said, like tweens and. Do you want them? You know what I mean? Like, is that class we should really be kind of protective of? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it is a big concern. It really is. Next piece of tech news: Android 10 has had the fastest adoption rate of any version of Android yet. It has been installed on 100 million devices 5 months after it was launched. And, you know, one of the big concerns about Android is that it always had a install-based fragmentation. And, you know, what you can see here is that when you look at the way this worked for all the other versions, all the other old versions, Oreo, Pi, and Oreo MR1 were a lot lower than Android 10. When Android 10 passed 150 days after launch, they hit their 100 million install base mark, and all of the other ones, you know, were still under 50 million, close to, you know, 20 million in that case. And you know, this is good. It shows that Google is making progress with Android and encouraging users to update to the most recent versions of it. And, you know, this is in stark comparison to what happens on iOS, where right now 81% of all iOS devices are running on iOS 13. So Apple makes that push, and Google has had problems to do that since the beginning. And, you know, now we can see that, oh, they're actually having a bit of success with this. So this is actually really good, ensuring that all the users out there get the security updates that they need, have all the features they need for any new apps that come out. And, of course, for people like you, Tanis, accessibility.
Yeah. So how did they manage that this time? Did they stop providing updates for the other systems? Like, what was it that pushed people the most? Like,
it was something called Project Mainline, which allows hardware manufacturers an easier time to integrate the new versions or the new Android updates into their firmware. Because, you know, you have lots of Android phone makers like Sony, Huawei, and Samsung, just to name a few, that whenever they make a phone, they just don't use the vanilla version of Android, which is the best version of Android, in my opinion. But they put their own little spin on it, and it's those delays from all those manufacturers that prevent it from getting into the user's hands quickly.
Okay.
And that's why I always tell anybody who wants to buy an Android device who's coming from iOS is that, you know, you're best to move to a Pixel, because it's going to provide the most iOS-like experience that you can get. Granted, it's not fully like iOS, but it's going to be the most iOS-like experience you can get on Android. So that's nice. Now, you know, we got the PS5 and Xbox Series X coming out in the fall, right?
Yep.
And for a long time, the prices of the video game physical copies that you'd buy were $60, you know, for the Xbox One and the PS4. And it was announced this week that the prices for the AAA games on the PS5 and Xbox One X, or Xbox Series X, are going up to $70 US. And, you know, last time we saw game prices this high was in the late 90s.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
And this is all inflation. This is all inflation adjusted too.
Yeah, they're the wrong. This is going the wrong way. And this is solely, like, the only reason we pay $60 is to keep the brick and mortar stores.
Sorry, the 2010s is when we saw that price last. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only reason we're paying what we're paying right now is to keep failing stores like GameStop open, which kind of sucks to begin with. I mean, whatever.
What are you feeling?
I feel like if people aren't wanting to consume in that way anymore, then why are we subsidizing that and fighting against what most people want, which is we're getting it digitally anyway.
Yeah. Let's be real. Digital is way more convenient than buying a disc, because, you know, if you buy here's what happens for anybody who doesn't have one. On the Xbox, if you buy a game on a disc, you put the disc in, you load the game, but then when it's time for a content update, you download the content update, and because of the way the rights management works, you still need to put the disc in to play it, even though you're playing a copy that's been downloaded. So you might as well just download the game.
And I mean, you know, if you are concerned environmentally, digital, a lot better, right? I mean, it just feels like everything is the wrong way. And I know it's only $10, but man, it's $10 to prop up people that don't.
Yeah. And you know what the concerning part is that when you look at what happens in other currencies, and I'm talking Canada and the UK and the EU, who has more than whose dollar value is worth less than the US, you're going to wind up with $100 games. It'll be $80 here in Canada, but you'll definitely wind up with games that, based on the way the dollar value goes and the way the conversion goes, are more than $100 US when you do the currency conversion in the UK and the EU.
Yep. And that's only going to be, and that's for the basic version, right? There's still going to be packaging other stuff selling you the $100 digital, or no, the $100 like deluxe that comes with a felt bag or something, you know, just whatever you make. Like, yeah, this was sad. I thought, like, really, you're going to squeeze another $10 on top of all your microtransactions? All right. Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see how this goes. I was thinking of getting the new Xbox this year, but maybe we'll wait and see.
At one point I was thinking about that, and, but I went a different way.
Yeah. and see, that's another year. That's another weird thing, because all of the games that come out for the new Xbox are going to be backwards compatible with the One, the Xbox One.
Right. So, I mean, you could go cheaper if you wanted to and just get that.
Well, no, they're going to be packaged as Xbox Series X games. And they're just going to work on the One. When in reality, I mean, there's a huge install base out there who's going to be playing it on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing about this. It has been confirmed that the new games coming out this year will still work on the original Xbox One, and Microsoft hasn't announced any plan for obsolescence of that Xbox One that, you know, shipped back in 2013. So, getting a long life out of that console.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect console, too, you know?
It was a good console.
Yeah. I mean, it does lots of fun stuff for the TV entertainment center, and that's the main reason I got it. They moved away from that with the new one. So, but there's your tech news for the week, everybody. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Let's move on to achievements this week.
All right. So
start us off.
Well, we are starting off with Air Snipers with 99 Slayer on July 8th. Then we have Hey, I'm Zach with 99 Magic on July 8th. Then we have Jammy Jenny with 99 Archaeology on July 8th. Dianima with 99 Archaeology on July 7th. And Ithmus with 99 Archaeology on July 7th.
Nicely done. Also, rounding out the 7th, we have Kazanda with 99 Runecrafting, Spartacus with 99 Invention. Then on the 6th, we have Arendelle 20 with 99 Ranged. Parnassius got 120 Archaeology on the 6th. Rastafa got 120 Firemaking on July 4th. And VI Nightshade got 120 Invention also on the 4th. Nicely done, everyone.
Yeah.
Nice achievements. All around. Alrighty, it is time for a pick of the week, and I got this one this week. It's been a while since I've done this one, and this one's something that is primarily going to benefit our American listeners, but it's a fun thing to look at for everybody else if you read American news. And this is one thing that is very, very important in an election year in the United States. And that's being able to identify exactly who wrote this news story you're looking at and which way it leans. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we live in this kind of world, but we live in a world where pretty much every media outlet, no matter which one it is, has a political slant to it, whether it be MSNBC, CNN, or Fox News, just to name a few of them, they all have political stances to them. You could say the same thing from the Associated Press all the way to the Daily Caller on the right, just to name a few of them. And I have a website here called All Sides. You can find it at allsides.com. And what it does is it fills out the very news stories that you see in the news each and every day, and it breaks them down, and it writes a non-biased headline for each of the news stories. And in addition to that, it provides coverage of what the left-leaning outlets are talking about regarding it, what the people in the center are saying, and what the people on the right are saying about it as well. And this is actually really important to do because, you know, anybody who gets their news from really only one source is living in a bubble. And when you live in a bubble, you close yourself off to other experiences and other perspectives about the news. And, you know, that's not a good thing to do because we make our best decisions when we're fully informed on all the facts that are out there, depending on how you view facts in this day and age. But what we need to take away from this is that
even alternative ones.
Is what?
I said even alternative ones.
Exactly. And what you need to take away from this is that your friends, your family, and other people are going to be seeing news in a different way than you are. And if you can see the news the same way they are, and understand their perspective, you're going to be able to talk about it better and have a dialogue. And I know this is a problem in many families, increased polarization, as it seems to be something that's spread out everywhere. And that's what this website does is it lets you see all the different sources of the news, and it highlights all the different headlines from the various news outlets out there. And what they actually do is they group news outlets into different categories, as in far left, left-leaning, centrist, right-leaning, and on the right. And what you can do is they actually have a chart of all these things out there, and if you can see where your favorite news sources fall on this. They call it the media bias chart, and they update it every so often. And, you know, it's just a good tool to have in this day and age. And they also have an FAQ which highlights where they get their funding from, and they prove that, you know, they're not funded by anybody trying to push a specific agenda. They also talk about the fact that their journalists that they use to write these headlines have different perspectives from all across the political spectrum. And, you know, it's just so important in this day and age to have a varied news source on this. So for anybody who follows U.S. news, it doesn't have versions for the rest of the world. But if you follow U.S. news, definitely give this website a check. It's called allsides.com. And that's the pick of the week.
Cool.
And they also have a very interesting article about discovering media bias and whatnot, and how you can particularly see it, 11 types of media bias and how to spot them. One is spin, examples of spin words and phrases. And this is just a bit of a lesson out there to everybody. Some examples of spin words and phrases are emerge, serious, refuse, crucial, high stakes, tirade, landmark, turn up the heat, and so on and so forth. They also talk about mind reading as well, which is actually really important. So, allsides.com.
When they talk about the different biases, Shane, do they ever mention an establishment bias? That's something a lot of us on the left point out a lot.
We found out
during the Bernie primary. We did not know.
They mainly talk about bias regarding left, right, center.
Okay, well, a lot of people here would say, like, okay, so like people in the U.S., well, some people anyway, might say, like, would expect CNN to be middle, right?
Yeah, but they're not.
The middle, or, well, for us, it's they have an establishment bias, okay, right? They're always protecting status quo and the power.
For comparison here, they rate CNN as a lean left.
Really?
Yeah, and CNN opinion as a left. Their center news sources are the Associated Press, BBC, Bloomberg, NPR, Online News Only, Reuters, The Hill, USA Today, and The Wall Street Journal.
I actually don't disagree with that.
They're lean right news sources are Fox News, Online Only, Reason, Wall Street Journal Opinion, The Examiner, and The Washington Times. Their lean left news sources are ABC, The Atlantic, BuzzFeed, CBS, CNN News Online, The Economist, The Guardian, NBC, The New York Times, Online News, NPR Opinion, Politico, Time, and The Washington Post.
Okay, so they're calling left like corporate Democrat.
Left are Alternet, CNN Opinion, The Daily Beast, The Huffington Post, The Intercept, Mother Jones, MSNBC, The New Yorker, The New York Times Opinion, Slate, and Vox.
No Young Turks. And
no, they're not listed.
MSNBC is not, I repeat, not far left.
It's just left, not far left. Sorry.
I was going to say, because that's like establishment 101. Like, it is all corporate Democrats all day. I mean, hell, their biggest star is a Republican, Joe Scarborough.
And
come on.
And it's left, not far left. And on the right, they have Breitbart, The Blaze, The Daily Caller, The Daily Mail, Daily Wire, Fox News Opinion, The Federalist, National Review, New York Post, and Newsmax.
Okay.
And they also have a fun little survey you can take where you can discover your own biases.
Those are always fun.
Yeah. So allsides.com. What have you been up to this week on RS?
I'm trying to work on Yak Track now on Junior, because, who doesn't like sweet cosmetics, right?
Yeah.
But any little prismatic fallen star that I can get for divination right now would be just wonderful.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you know how div, if you're doing div, and especially if you're doing div, like, you know how it used to be, like, pre-caches, because I never know when I'm going to be on. I rarely catch a cache. It's just really slow, man. So, yeah. I'm doing some Yak Track for some cosmetics and hoping to get some of the experience stuff.
Nice. All of mine are going to Dungeoneering on that.
Is it? Yeah, fair enough, yeah. That's not your favorite, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. So, all right. That's good to hear. Any 120s in the cards?
No, I will. When it comes to my main, I'm just slowly chipping away on archaeology. Once you got 99, it was over. I just figured it doesn't matter if I get it now or 2028. It's over.
Nice.
Doesn't really matter.
Nice. All right. As for me, Yak Track. I made about 8 million GP doing the Herblore one that required around 1,300 potions made. I made weapon poison +++. I gathered my own slime. I gathered my own primal pulp. I gathered my own nightshade. Of course, you have to do that. The only thing I bought was the coconut milk.
Oh, well, but you had 1,300 of those?
Yeah, it only took a week to gather, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, I only needed 700 because I split it. I did half weapon poison +++, and then I did half +++.
Oh, well, yeah, because one requires the other, right?
Exactly. So that's a fun thing I've had with these Yak Track tasks is, they seem a bit obtuse, but I just turned them on their head. For the Herblore one, I did that. And for the crafting one, I've just been blowing through my supply of dragonhide that I got from doing Big Game Hunter. Red and black dragonhide, right? So I've just been crafting using that for the ones that, you need to craft dragonhide stuff with.
So you're Iron Manning your Yak Track.
Pretty much. I think I'm on task 27 at the moment.
Oh.
And I've accumulated 7 skip tokens over the time, plus the free one you got at 25. Yeah.
Nice.
So, I mean, if I wanted to, I could dump a bond and be done by task 40.
That's true.
So, you know, I've been having good fun with it. I don't know. They definitely do feel a lot more intense than they did last time around, and I'm not sure I like that. And I definitely don't want them to go the distraction and diversion route. So there's that. But I've been, you know, whenever there's an archaeology task, I take it. 500k away from level 101 archaeology, just back at Everlight now, actually, with that. Because I haven't been there for a while. But the 100 archaeology spots are nice. And that's pretty much all I've been up to, is just Yak Track stuff. So, like I said, Yak Track keeps me busy, and I like it because it keeps my experience varied in-game.
Fair enough.
But I don't believe there's anything else, so I think we can end this one here. Hopefully you guys all enjoyed that. If you guys want full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbmb.com. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that on any podcast listener out there, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, even YouTube. Just go to update.rsbmb.com/subscribe and click on the one that you want. Subscribing's good because it delivers the podcast automatically to you. It's also good for our ratings, and it makes sure that you don't miss an episode. So please subscribe, share it with a friend. And with that said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.